Yes guy, no guy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, drivers and passengers, time now for the fully sanctioned, all rights given edition of Yes Guy, No Guy in Overdrive, which doesn't happen often. So here we go. Are we ready?
Before we get going, Guy, go to Dave first. Go to Dave first, and then I'll go. Is that okay, Guy?
Well, I guess it is, Guy, since you interrupted me. You ruined my flow, but nonetheless, here we go. I don't really care who answers. It's up to you guys. Yes, Guy, No Guy, listen to the tone. Rasmus Sandin is happy to be making Timothy Liljegren money?
Oh, that's an absolute, definitive no guy.
No guy.
He can't be happy about this, fellas. I mean, this is a capitulation. This is saying, I don't want to be sitting at home anymore. This is not some good deed that Rasmus Sandin did for the Maple Leafs. This was Rasmus Sandin getting nervous, saying, I actually don't think I have as much leverage as I think I do, even though defensemen are dropping like flies. I think it's a smart move by him. I don't think it was a smart move to be holding out as long as he did. But there's no way he's happy to be making that money, because the reason he was sitting in Sweden is because he thought he was worth substantially more than that money.
Yeah, no, it's no guy, big time no guy. He's accepted this deal because he understands he needs to play, he needs to get some kind of training camp and get up and running with the team. But ultimately, this guy wanted to make Adam Boqvist money, which is, you know, a cap hit of Boqvist makes 2.6 on his cap hit. I would imagine Rasmus probably thought he was looking at $2 million, and Sean Durzi signed for 1.7 per year. So, you know, those are the guys he's looking at as far as salary goes. The issue is, when you're a restricted free agent, you're only negotiating with one team. So you only have comparables for one team, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the bar had been set with Timothy Liljegren, and that's ultimately what he had to accept. Probably not happy about it, but at the end of the day, you got to prove yourself, you got to play, and you didn't have any leverage in the situation. So it's smart that he's back, smart that he's going to play. And listen, 1.4, whatever that cap hit is, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's good money. And if you know, he has the capability to put up points, put up big numbers, that's when you sign your ticket.
Yeah, I'm a big no guy on that. I admire him for doing what he did, and we'll see. The challenge is there for him to step up. So I always back the player when the challenge is there. Yes guy, no guy number two. Morgan Riley and Jake Muzzin spend more time playing together than Riley and TJ Brody.
I'm going to say no guy on this, even though I know we are watching an early training camp iteration of a pairing with Riley playing on the right and Muzzin playing on the left. But, you know, my problem with this whole, you know, the prognosis here, this scenario, guys, is that I'm not sure Jake Muzzin's going to be playing enough for that to be the case. I mean, the idea that he is, you know, heading into, you know, his 35-year-old year, we know the injury problems that have kept him out of some key moments of playoff series in recent memory. We know all the injury problems he had last year, including some, you know, significant concussion issues that he had to deal with. The idea that this guy's going to be in the lineup for, you know, what's the over-under on his availability? I'm going to put it at maybe 41 games. So I'm not sure he's going to be out there enough to make him a regular staple alongside Toronto's best defenseman.
Well, here's the way I look at this. So if you had Muzzin playing with Riley, theoretically you'd have Brody with Hall and then Giordano with one of Liljegren or Sandin. And that still presents an issue as far as getting Sandin into the lineup, even though Morgan Riley's playing the right side. I actually don't mind Muzzin on the first pair. I think that kind of just focuses his attention, and he doesn't have to eat a lot of those second pair kind of grungier minutes. You know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag when you play the second pair. But I just think that the health could be an issue. And I don't know, like Morgan Riley playing the right side, I'm not sure if that's a long-term solution for me, so it's going to be a no guy.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with both of you is what I'm trying to say. It's, you know, when I look at that blue line, so let's just do an ad lib, yes guy, no guy. Yes guy, no guy, I think we all agree with MJ's assessment of that blue line, but doesn't that, the way that blue line is stacked, sort of scream to upgrade it, to get somebody who's like a go-to guy who can give you the 82 games at high octane? Yes guy, no guy, the Leafs should upgrade that blue line.
Oh, I'm a big yes guy on that. I mean, I you know, A, just the idea that you're already worried about the health of Jake Muzzin, who's been a linchpin, and to me is, you know, I overestimated his age. He's only 33, but he's got high mileage. We know that, you know, we know all the injury issues. That concerns me immensely if I'm Kyle Dubas. The idea that you've already lost, you know, you lost Timothy Liljegren for the early part of the season here. You know, Rasmus Sandin, you're not sure what you're going to get out of him since he's been sitting at home and you haven't actually, you know, laid eyes on him in any significant situation. Mark Giordano, you know, is into his late 30s and you're expecting a regular shift from him, albeit on the third pairing. There's, you know, there's no doubt to me that they've got to look to upgrade here, if only to sort of, you know, keep pace with the idea that, you know, last year you had a pretty injury-free year. What if this year was a little more injury-pocked? I'd be concerned if I'm in Leafs management about that.
Yeah, listen, I think you're always looking to upgrade. You're always looking to get better. I don't think it's urgent. You know, it's not that long ago that we were talking about the Leafs need to trade one of their defensemen because they have a logjam. It's such a position of depth, you know, and they're facing some injuries now, and this defense is going to be tested. We're going to see what they're all about. But if you start the season and you're not giving up the big scoring chances and you're clearing the front of the net and you're moving the puck and things are going pretty good, that'll cool things off. So I'm going to say no guy for now, but, you know, remains to be seen as far as how they play when the season gets going.
Okay, yes guy, no guy. I believe it's number three. I've lost count here. Aaron Judge reaches the 60 homer mark at least two more times in his career. Yes guy, no guy.
Oh, I'm going to say no guy to that. I mean, this is a Herculean year. The reason it's so significant is just because it's such an outlier. The idea that he's doing what he's doing, and doing it at a level compared to his peers that is just, you know, so outstanding. You look at it, he's got 61. The next guy in Major League Baseball's got 42. Yeah. Which tells you how hard it is to hit 61, right? When the rest of the league is, you know, there's only two guys that are at 40 in Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso right now. Yeah, this is the ultimate outlier year. He's a great player. I don't doubt that he's going to be a very good player for many, many years to come. But the idea that this guy's just going to reel off 60 home run seasons, I mean, I think you'd be underestimating how difficult what he is doing right now has been.
Yeah, and this is not a slight against Aaron Judge. He's a fantastic player. He's having one of the best seasons we've ever seen in baseball. But it's a no guy. You're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be sniffing around 60 home runs. And like you said, Dave, if this guy's getting 40, 45 home runs, that's a big year. That's a big year in this day and age in the major leagues. So that would be, to quote the great Al's brother, I just don't see it happening.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah, that sums it up. I'm going to disagree with both of you. I think he does it again.
Wow.
If anybody can, it's him. This guy is he's a specimen. I mean, he either does that or sets a record for intentional walks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think he is a specimen. I think he's an incredible player. But, you know, last year you look at it and what, you know, 48 home runs led the major leagues. The 162 game season before that in 2019, before the pandemic, it was 53 that led the major leagues. Like you can be leading the major leagues, 48 led it the year before that. Like, it's hard to get into the 60s, man. That's why we're making such a big deal of this.
Exactly.
And that's why this is just something that I think we're going to be remembering for many years, because I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon.
Okay, this is kind of a lightweight yes guy, no guy, but I'm going to throw it out there. Then that's probably another game. Lightweight yes guy, no guy. Jose Barrios does not make an appearance in the wild card round for the Jays. Does not make an appearance.
Oh, that's going to be a no guy. I mean, you know, because I think that the reason for that, guys, is, and we've been talking about it on this show over the summer, is management makes these calls. This is not about Schneider. This is not about anybody that's on the bench during the game. This is about management's vision of the Toronto Blue Jays. And the management vision of the Toronto Blue Jays sees Jose Barrios as a very important asset to whom they've gifted a $120 million contract, and they need him to perform. So whether or not he's going to start a game, I'm not sure. I think Ross Stripling probably can make a great case, but he's definitely going to be in a game. And if he doesn't start, probably multiple games.
Yeah, so I'm with you there, Dave. I think it's no guy. I think at some point we're going to see Barrios. And if it's not a start, I know he hasn't come out of the bullpen, but you got to think in a playoff situation, you know, certain strategies or certain setup situation, we're going to see Barrios come out of the bullpen if Stripling decides to get the start. Even though Barrios has struggled, I am not convinced that it's Ross Stripling's start in Game 3. I just think there's too much, I guess, pedigree. I don't know if pedigree is the right word or body of work over the course of his career that says, you know, and the contract. Like it's a tough message to send, you know, around the league when you're trying to recruit pitchers to your team, and it says, you know, we're going to sign you, but in Game 3 of the playoffs, you might not start. And I don't know. I just think it might send the wrong message. And you know what? You could even go the other way. You could even go the other way and say, well, if you don't give Ross Stripling this start, it sends a bad message. And it says, no matter how bad you play, as long as you make X amount of dollars, you'll still be rewarded with starts in the playoffs. So, listen, I don't know what they're going to do, but you can take it to the bank. At some point, we will see Barrios in the wild card series.
Yeah, and I got the number wrong.
Okay, let's end on this one. Two.
Sorry, guys. I just wanted to correct myself, Tatman. I apologize. I said $120 million investment. It was $131 million, which is another, you know, $11 million. Why he's
just
definitely
11.
Going to be appearing in the playoffs.
Just $11 million, no biggie.
Oh. Yeah, okay. I'm used to working with factual people. But nonetheless, let's end on this one. Yes guy, no guy. Tua will be the Dolphins' starting quarterback next season.
If it was next week, I was going to say, let's hope not, guy. But next season, yes, guy. I think next season, yes, guy. I think there will be, you know, continued belief in this player. I mean, I know that Al's brother has attempted to tell us that the Finns are frauds, but, you know, Tua, to me, is a guy that will always tantalize because he has this incredible potential. Now, we're all wishing, we're all hoping that Tua is going to be okay after these, you know, these pair of ugly incidents where he's had, you know, what looked like to, you know, us armchair experts as concussions in you know, two games over the course of 4 days in the NFL, and it's been pretty ugly, and who knows what this is going to do to him and how it's going to affect his future. But if I'm betting, yeah, I think Tua will be in Miami as the starter beyond this season.
I'm going to say yes, guy, as well. But I'm going to say it with a little bit of caution. And the caution for me comes from if this injury, this concussion issue, if this keeps going south and doesn't get better, I can see a situation where Tua says to the team, I don't like the way you guys treated me with the concussion. I'd like to move on to another team, please. And that's, you know, that's if Tua is able to play. And I'm sure, you know, he's going to get the attention and the care that he needs. I hope so. But that's the only situation. It's not going to be something where they say, oh, we don't think Tua's the quarterback for us or he's the guy for us. How many times have we seen quarterbacks go around the league carousel, team to team, and struggle? And when you have a decent quarterback, you hold on to him. And I think Tua fits the bill of a more than decent, more than capable quarterback in the NFL. So, yes, guy.